Welcome to the Philharmonic Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 8:02 British Summertime. Today is May 8th. And of course, today being Friday, it's the big picture long-term audio for the various different asset classes. But first, let's have a review of this week, because it has been really a rather eventful week. We see that it is being currently it's being rounded off on the stock markets for a number of these up for the ninth consecutive week. They are starting to look a little bit overextended at this point, but we would definitely need to see downward dynamics and a break of this consecutive pattern of up weeks to question upside potential at this stage. We are also seeing that a large number of indices have either reverted to their 200-day moving average, or are in the process of doing so, or have broken through it. So what we have predicted since the October meltdown was that mean reversion was extremely likely. And yes, markets did go sideways for a long period of time, but we are now starting to see that this rally, which had long been expected, has seen large numbers of indices reverting to their means. And this is true for not just the leading markets, but we're seeing, for example, that the Nikkei, with its break upwards today, well, upwards yesterday and improvement on that today, has reverted to its 200-day moving average, and the S&P is within 30 or 40 points of its 200-day moving average. So we are certainly seeing that markets have reverted, and these moves that we've seen to the upside are very impressive. Where markets go from here is going to be the big question, because if this is the beginning of a new bull market, and from our standpoint, it is certainly looking that way, then we should expect to see that any reaction that occurs, we would see support coming in above the lows and the beginnings of consistent uptrends in the making. However, if this is no more than a bear market rally within an overall downtrend, and we've reverted to the mean, that means there is plenty of room for this market to break to the downside and move even further lower. And I would rate that as a 10% chance from 100, with a 90% chance that we're going to see large numbers of markets finding support above their lows, and for leading markets finding support above their base formations, because we have seen a large number of emerging Asian economies and technology-led Asian economies leading to the upside, breaking upwards from these bases, in conjunction with the same types of moves in commodity producing Latin America. And it is these areas which are leading to the upside, not only in terms of percentage gain, but also in terms of their timing, which is a suggestion that they are a primary destination for investment flows, even when we saw that other markets back at the beginning of March, we saw that the level of bearishness that was evident in lagging markets such as the USA, Europe, was quite stunning. But even at that point, we were seeing relative strength right across the boards in Asia, where large numbers of those markets had not broken to the downside in early February, and they started breaking upwards, with China being the number one leader in that group of leading markets. So these are going to be primary destinations for investment flows as credit and liquidity begin to thaw out, and as investors start to move away from these safe havens, because that is the other very big thing that has happened this week. Recording the audio only last night, I said that there was a lot of evidence in some of what we would consider lesser or potentially lesser currencies rather than potentially reserve currencies that the dollar was topping out. And today we're starting to see greater evidence that the dollar is topping out versus some of the major currencies such as the euro or the pound. For example, we see that the dollar is weaker by over 2 cents against the euro, just under 2 cents by the pound, a cent and a half against the Australian dollar. Against the Canadian dollar, it's also just under 2 cents. And there is significant moves on a whole range of other currencies. And this is important, because when we look back at how things have been performing, it's been those safe haven assets, which were the US dollar, the yen, and US treasuries and gold, which had performed remarkably well when people When we were in this apocalyptically bearish phase and there was massive liquidation of carry trades and leverage. But we're now in the post-apocalyptic world and we are starting to see not only green shoots, whereas we're starting to see the initial signs that the economy may be hitting bottom and the stock markets are in the process of base building in the USA. We are starting to see that markets which were relatively unaffected by the credit crisis are performing remarkably well, and this has all the hallmarks of new bull market performance. And we're starting to see that even though they are overextended, they have so much room to consolidate above their lows that it would be remarkable if they were to give up this entire advance and go move on to new low ground, and it would take something of biblical proportions for that to happen, and I'm certainly not predicting that. So, the world has been split into two distinct halves, and leading markets in Asia and Latin America are where the action is. And this missing component for large numbers of investors in the For the want of a better word, the English-speaking world and large parts of Europe, they have often been deterred from investing in these regions because of currency differentials. Because you've got the relative strength of their domestic currencies against emerging markets. But if we're starting to see that the massively oversold condition that we've seen for large numbers of emerging market currencies and commodity-related currencies is now turning around, then stock market investors, or commodity investors for that matter, will have the wind at their backs when investing in these markets, because not only will they have the stock market performance, but they will have a positive currency market behind them as well. And that is a charmed existence in these markets. Now, the Asian dollar index, as an example, had a remarkably consistent uptrend for the better part of 7 years, and it topped out about a year ago and fell rather dramatically and really retraced a large part of the gain that it had put in that prior uptrend. And that appreciating index and lots of Asian currencies appreciating was a tailwind for stock markets in the region. And now that we've had this big pullback, the strength of the Asian currencies and increasingly the Latin American currencies won't be taken as a given. And people will be looking much more at how the stock market is performing, but they will be keeping a very close eye on how the currencies are performing as well. So we are potentially into a more volatile trading environment over the next couple of years. And that's regardless of the fact that we've seen over the last week that the VIX has come down quite sharply and that the TED spread and the OIS spread have been continually making new lows and are well into the previous range that we saw throughout 2008 and continue to push lower. So this is an indication that volatility is decreasing. And the availability of credit in the market is improving. But because we've had such a remarkable dent put in investor confidence, it is going to take time to work that out. And because we are now at the beginning of a new bull market cycle, and the first psychological perception stage of a new bull market is disbelief, people are willing to run these consistent trends at the moment because they're profitable. But as soon as they start losing their consistency, there's a strong likelihood that people are going to start heading for the hills quickly because they will do in the next cycle what they wish they'd done in the last one, and that is sell early. So there is potential that once this very consistent, impressive uptrend runs its course, we're going to move into a more rangy, choppy environment as this overbought condition is unwound. But that is also going to provide us with a good buying opportunity from an investment perspective as well as a trading perspective. We're just not there. We're not there just yet. But if we are now also starting to see that emerging market currencies are improving relative to the dollar and the pound, euro, or yen, then that should help to put a bid under the market because investors will be under less pressure to liquidate their positions because their currency profits from these trades will help to limit the downside risk in any pullback. And that is what we saw continually in these emerging markets from 2003 all the way up to 2008. And there's a strong likelihood that that type of environment is likely to prevail going forward as well. That is conjecture at the moment, and we probably won't be able to say with any high degree of confidence that that is the case for another year. But I think it's a relatively safe prediction based on what we're looking at the moment. And in the commodity markets, well, commodities have been performing right across the boards over the last month or so. And while it's not on the absolute basis that we saw going up to the highs they posted last in March of 2008, we are seeing a lot of strength coming into the industrial metal complex, and we've seen a number of those metals breaking up from their bases. Copper, zinc, lead, and increasingly tin are leading that group. Natural gas appears to be in a bottoming process. Oil is up three, sorry, is up $1.75 today. It's at $58, closing in on $60 level. So all of those predictions that oil was going to go back to $10 are looking wrong at the moment, and it looks increasingly likely that we will never see oil prices back at those levels again. The risks certainly appear to be to the upside in this developing base formation. So that's in what people are looking at a lot, but we look at the soft commodities, and we see that soybeans is showing considerable relative strength, as is sugar. And of course, sugar didn't take part in that massive run-up in commodities last year at all. It had its massive acceleration back in 2007 and spent the vast majority of last year consolidating and broke upwards from that consolidation in the last couple of weeks. So significant strength moving into the sugar market. Orange juice, cotton are also showing considerable strength. And it also looks like the lumber market is in a base formation development. Having been looked at as a proxy for the housing market, it does appear to be finding support. I'm not at all sure how justified that proxy comparison is, but it doesn't take away from the fact that we are starting to see lumber prices bottoming out. So we see now that even though there remains a large contango for a large number of these commodities, they are pushing on the upside, which suggests that we are getting investment flows into this region, and we're getting investment flows into the stock markets, which is taking attention away from these safe havens. And we look at government bonds, and the US Treasury, currently at 120/10, has retraced the entire advance throughout the panicky environment that prevailed between September all the way through to November and December. Government bond yields, when we look at those charts, we see that yields are pushing back up into the range, or at least threatening to push back up into the range that extended for the majority of 2008. It appears that it would be surprising at this point if we saw government bond prices back up to the levels that we saw a few months ago, anytime in the next few years, or perhaps even ever. If there is one bubble that's still out there, it is in government bond prices. They've been pushing upwards for the better part of 20-something odd years. Yields have just hit historic lows. There hasn't been an instance in the data that I've seen where yields have been so remarkably low. And predicting that markets are going to get even worse when we've already seen them hit absolute historic lows is a risky game, because you would have to be predicting absolute financial Armageddon to justify buying bonds at such remarkably low yields on a 30-year basis. And it could be deemed a success of the quantitative easing process that government bond prices have held up so remarkably well over the last few months. But we are now seeing, on a commonality basis, that the US government bonds led to the upside. They led on the retracement, and we're now starting to see that gilts, bunds, Canadian 10-year, Australian 10-year, JGBs have all started to show considerable weakness, and these are developing top formations right across the boards because government bond prices were supported by the panic selling and the need for a safe haven. But as investor confidence returns and the possibility of recovery is looked at more in terms of an inevitability rather than a potential outcome, we start to see that people are starting to look now towards the future and saying, well, what do I want to own if we are going to move into recovery, however long that takes, rather than looking at what they want to own for a decade or multi-decade long depression. And this is a significant change because there is a vast sum of cash sitting on the sidelines. Quantitative easing, though, bears some further discussion because government bond prices are coming off, and probably in tandem with that, we're starting to see a weaker dollar. The dollar was in a momentum trade, I think, more than anything else. I think it's very difficult to make a sound bullish case for why the dollar should be very strong. The technical action, however, has been very positive, and it is one of the only instruments out there where it's had a big decline from approximately 2005 down to middle of 2008, and the moving average pushed all the way down. The moving average is now turned upwards, and the dollar index has found support above the moving average on a number of occasions. However, it looks increasingly likely that with the action that we're seeing and the prevalence of downward dynamics and the loss of momentum for the dollar over the last few months, that the support at the 200-day moving average is unlikely to hold at this point, and we could see some further weakness creeping into the dollar. But that is not to predict a dollar rout or a dollar collapse, because when we take into account the concerted efforts that central banks have put in to help support financial markets and avert a depression, then it's not too much of a further step to wade in and help support the dollar in the case if there were any potential for a dollar collapse. So the prognosis, I think, is much more skewed towards a ranging base formation for the dollar, and that suggests that we're going to have more volatile activity for the commodities in particular. Commodities are best bought following reactions, and we've been saying that for as long as I've been with Fuller Money, which will be 6 years in November. And it's no less true today than it was back then. It's a volatile asset class, and considering the explosive moves we've had for a number of these commodities, this is probably not the right time to go buying. The best way back in 2003 and 2004, which in a number of ways are an analogous to the way markets are moving in here today, then it was a faith-based trading environment where the best money was made by buying them as they were finishing their reactions, even though the technical action was volatile. The most important thing going forward is going to be the progression of higher lows. And as long as these industrial metals and the energy complex sustain their progression of higher lows, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside, and the buying the dips trading strategy will become very useful going forward. But buying the dips in conjunction, particularly on a leveraged basis, we should also be bear in mind that the winning strategy when things became overdone was to implement trading stop and to take out the position as these things start to accelerate, because that is also part of their characteristics. They are prone to acceleration. And that brings us to gold, because we have vast sums of money getting pumped into the global economy. This isn't the first time it's happened. We've been seeing liquidity pumped into markets on every financial crisis in the last 20 years. But beyond the shadow of a doubt, this is the biggest attempted reflation in the history of the world. And once you let the genie out of the bottle, there is no control over where the money that gets added to the system actually ends up. And all the evidence is currently pointing towards the liquidity getting pumped into stock markets and getting pumped into commodities. And when we talk about stock markets, it is increasingly likely that the prime destination for investment flows is going to be into emerging Asia, it's going to be into commodity producers in Latin America and elsewhere. And this secular theme, which we have been talking about for a number of years, has been interrupted by this global recession. But it was an interruption. It doesn't appear to have dislodged this secular theme. And stock and commodity market performance over the last few months suggests that this secular theme is being put back on track. And that is notable. With the amount of liquidity that is getting pumped into the markets, and the competitive devaluation that we're seeing among countries as increasing numbers of them adopted these quantitative easing policies. And there is no country is willing to sustain a or willing to tolerate a strong currency beyond the short to medium term in this environment. Then the need for a hard currency becomes an increasing necessity. And that's where gold comes in. Because gold has performed in line with a varying number of instruments over the years. Most recently, it moved up with the dollar, which goes completely counterwise with how it had used to move. Last year, it went up with the oil market. And at the moment, it seems to be appreciating with stock markets. And in all these scenarios, gold was looked on as a hedge against inflation and as a hedge against deflation. And right now, it's been consolidating, following its high above $1,000 for the better part of a year. And on two previous occasions, we've seen that gold has consolidated in a volatile, ranging fashion for the better part of a year and a half. And following those consolidations, it has broken and exploded to the upside. And we remain within about $100 of the highs, and it has found its way back above $900 very impressively over the last few weeks. And there is an increasing possibility that it is edging its way back up towards the upper side of its range prior to breaking upwards at some point in the next year. And that is probably going to be a breakout worth backing in a big way. So that is definitely something to keep an eye on, because gold has now broken away from these other safe havens. When we see that the yen is getting weaker, treasuries are getting weaker, the dollar is getting weaker, but gold is very steady. And that gives it its real status as the safe haven asset. So there is also the point I think I made in the audio last night that gold fell as the stock markets began to rally, probably because it suffered from people taking their money out of it and putting it into stock markets. But if that process has now stopped, it suggests that the people who bought gold as a hedge and wanted to buy stock markets have already done so. And the people who are buying it now are buying it more as an investment for the medium to longer term rather than a short-term hedge against stock market weakness. So that is a very positive development. Going forward, China is looking increasingly more mature. It's got a massive pool of cash, which it is allocating on an intelligent basis. They are buying up resources all over the world. I think it was very telling that I think it was the CEO at BHP said that it doesn't matter where they've gone to make an acquisition, China has got there before them. And they are thinking for the long term. Because when we look at our part of the world in the West, we see that our countries are very highly urbanized. And China is on one of the largest urbanization programs in history. They're building cities to house millions of people, tens of millions of people in every city. They have something like 40% urbanization now, and they're planning to be somewhere towards 80% in 20 years' time. So this is one of the biggest moves of people from an agrarian to an urban society in the history of the world. The same process, although probably not as planned, is going on in India, and we have massive young populations in a whole host of other emerging countries. So the urbanization theme is a secular theme, and the need for commodities to build highways, infrastructure, sewage, and houses, schools, and jobs for the masses of people that are coming off the land and into cities is also a secular theme. These countries are leading the world in terms of GDP growth. They have been less affected by the credit crisis, and they are increasingly taking up a bigger percentage of global GDP growth. Not just the growth, but in terms of absolute GDP. But in terms of market capitalization, they are still at a fraction of where we are in the US and in Europe and the UK. With that GDP growth, with the massive urbanization, and with their ability to skip the technological ladder that so many of the developed economies had to go through and just go straight to the top end of technology. They're coming on fast, and the potential for emerging market capitalization to increase on a secular basis is quite considerable. The Wall Street leash effect is still a very important market correlation, because as Wall Street is steady to rising, it is still the biggest cap market, and the US is still the biggest GDP in the world. So it's going to have a knock-on effect. But we're starting now to move into what can only be termed a multipolar world, and there are new centers of gravity which are gaining ground. And China is certainly a prime candidate for being a new center of gravity, and certainly it is providing a positive influence for its major trade partners in the Asian and Latin American regions. And that is something that is probably going to increase over time, and the Wall Street leash effect will remain a powerful correlation, but it will probably diminish over time as we continue to see that the best opportunities will be in emerging markets. There is, of course, the potential that with the economic problems that we have in the West, and with the possibility that interest rates are going to remain lower for longer, that new carry trades are going to develop. Because we have interest rate differentials. For example, there is, I think, 6 or 7, maybe 8% differential between a number of the Western economy interest rates and Brazil at the moment. And the Brazilian economy is coming through this crisis relatively well. And with that interest rate differential and the potential for stock markets to improve, or with the bond yields being so much higher, then there is quite a temptation to look to other markets, borrow in cheap dollars or yen or pounds, and invest them abroad for a higher yield on the assumption that these currencies may remain weaker for longer relative to some of these emerging currencies. And if that is the case, if we do start to see a new carry trade starting to develop, it could be in one currency or a number of currencies, then that is going to supply an ample amount of liquidity to a number of these markets, and we could see them performing considerably better than expectations over the medium to longer term. Again, that is conjecture and is certainly something to be aware of the possibility of it occurring, but there's no great evidence that there is a new universally accepted carry trade coming into action at the moment. And the yen still remains a prime candidate because the possibility of them raising interest rates anytime soon is still very remote, and the yen does look like it is now weakening against a whole host of other currencies on a gradual ranging basis. And I think with that thought, I will leave you for the weekend, but I will leave you and wish you all the best to all of you.